Hey, Mike, how are you this morning?
Hey, Tom, I'm good. And in D.C. and trying to keep up with, you know, as events change, plus all the things that's going on in committee, so...
Right. Well, this is, you know, when I thought about what I was going to do with you, and I'm like, look, you know, there's a lot of bull garnkey. I'd like to talk about the things that are important to people in Southern Illinois. And to be honest with you, that's what I want to talk about this morning. And let me hold this up as an example.
All right.
Miners, coal miners benefits, that money, those promises, you know, those guys, and I know them, and I was there during the rioting in Galicia. I've been with the union people. I've been with the non-union company people. Right. We saw money. They said, look, we'll give you a smaller raise if we'll put this money in a pension for you. And then they said, we're bankrupt after they hid the money in other corporations. These guys were given
they were really
stiffed on this deal, Mike.
Yes, they were. So here is the plan. And here's what we've got done, and here's what we still need to get done. Now, here's what you want to remember. This is for the United Mine Workers. Now, understand, we have working coal miners today, but we don't have any United Mine Workers left. And you're right. There were a couple companies that created other companies, and they shifted all of their union companies over to these new companies and then allowed those companies to collapse. Therefore, then they are not bound to the obligation. So... What we've got is we've got men and women who have worked, put into a pension system, and a guarantee of health care through that pension system, or through that system, that basically are in danger of having that pulled out from underneath them. So what we did was we located and remember that the members of the coal caucus is not a big group. Those of us that have coal, and they're vitally important to us in our areas and have United Mine Workers. So myself, Dave McKinney from West Virginia, several others worked, and what we basically came up with was a funding stream that is, there was money being taken from every ton of coal that's been sold for years. I think it's been since the 50s for reclamation purposes, and that's put into a fund, and that fund actually has a tremendous amount of money in it, and out of that is also it's drawing interest. What our proposal did was to take that money out of the interest of that money. So it isn't, it's truly from the industry. It's not from the taxpayers. It's from the industry.
And it's not the capital. It's not the central capital. It's the interest derived from.
It's your interest derived from, because here's what you've got. Though it sounds like a large number, it's not a large number of United Mine Workers left. Remember, the youngest is probably my age. And then it just tapers off, and it's them, their spouses. What we did was we used that and made a permanent health care fix. We did not cure the pension problem yet. We cured the health care problem, okay? Now, what we have to do is we have to use that same technique to deal with the pension, but it's a problem because we have certain members, key members who are in positions to control what gets called, what passes, what doesn't pass. And we've got members who basically feel a philosophical difference to the fact that bailing out a pension system of any private company. And I understand that if it wasn't for the fact that we didn't have a revenue stream that tied to that particular industry.
Right.
That's why I can justify this. There, you know, and that's why this is what we're looking at doing. But there are those that say, if we do this, now there's other pension groups out there that are going to come and say, well, you did it for them. Well, that's fine if those other companies or those other pension groups can identify something that is strictly from the revenues of the business that they were in that can be used without walking into the principal.
Right.
So that's where we're at. Tom, we did get the health care problem cured. And let me tell you, these are elderly, as I said, majorities are elderly citizens. And this constant fear of worrying about that their health care and their pensions are going to fail, it weighs heavy on them, would weigh heavy on any person. But when you're a senior, when you're older adult, things like that,
it's what
just
you
cause worse health conditions.
It's what you work for your entire life.
You bet. And it's owed them. And we're not talking big pensions here.
Right.
We're talking, some of these people are getting $300 and $600 for their pension.
Right.
You know, that's not big.
Right. And they gave up pay at the time for this promise. That was part of the negotiations. Right. I remember I was really covering this, you know, a lot, especially when I was in Harrisburg at the time with a lot of this. Now, the other item involving money, and this is a disaster act because, you know, I mean, they've got these financial thresholds that must be crossed before you're eligible for assistance. But here's the thing. When you have a small town in southern Illinois, your entire town can be wiped off down to the ground. It still doesn't meet the requirements. The thing is, you want to be able to change this so it kind of makes a little more sense for smaller communities that can get suffer severe damage but still not reach these epic levels that kick in assistance.
Right. Let me tell you where this sprang from originally, and your listening area reaches just up to that area. But Rodney Davis was the one who took the lead on this originally, and it was to deal with places where the tornadoes had come through. But it doesn't matter whether it's tornadoes, whether it's floods, whatever. Yes, the thing is that the system was set up that it is leans extremely hard towards a larger community and not rural communities. Rural communities were basically, you had to have so severe damage that you could never reach that goal. And so by being able to change those guidelines, reaching and we got to do it now, okay, because we've suffered too many times that we've had very severe tornadoes, but all of a sudden, because it's in a rural area, you can't get the help and assistance. But it's just as devastating as if it would have been in a larger community with a larger population. So we're just trying to set the guidelines so that it's fair and that the help can be received in those rural communities. And like I said, it doesn't matter whether it's flood, it could be earthquake. We haven't had one like that, but it could be flood, earthquake, and windstorm damages, tornadoes, all of those things. And it just makes sense to put the threshold where in a severe case that rural areas can reach it.
Well, and, you know, we had an earthquake in the New Madrid 2.9, 7:56 a.m. this past Sunday as a little shaking reminder. Now,
the New Madrid is still there.
Right. The Affordable Care Act, I spent a lot of time thinking about this because I've seen the post, man, and quite a lot of name-calling, Congressman, I know you've got a thick skin because I've seen some of the new names they've chosen to pick you, and I'm like, wow. Here's the way my takeaway now as I see things. The Democrats made a promise that could not be kept to the entire North American population in this country. And now the Republicans have to keep a Democratic promise that could have never been kept because it was unfunctional in the first place. So everybody's mad at the Republicans because they can't fix what the Democrats couldn't do.
Well, that's a good way to chase it. But the reality is that it is collapsing. The ACA is collapsing. The bill that moved forward, understand it all, that part of the bill, understand that's one part of the bill. That's what people don't remember. It's one part of the bill. It is only the things that we're dealing with taxes and could deal with and be in the budget side because we were doing it for reconciliation. Now, we've sent it over to the Senate. They said they're going to totally redo it. And you know what? That's fine, because then what they'll do is they'll drive it to a conference committee, and then we can actually sit down and work it out that way. But I believe that the bill we passed is a good bill, and I'm going to say that right here, right now. I've said it when I voted for it. Look, for the people that say it doesn't cover pre-existing conditions, I always ask, did you read it? And they will say, well, I read part of it. No, that's not what I'm asking. Did you read it? Well, I said, it's 127 pages. It's not like what they passed whenever they passed the ACA and said, we got to pass it so we can find out what's in it. That's not the situation here. I know what's in it. It's 127 pages. I've read it. And it actually covers pre-existing conditions. It puts certain guidelines in place for insurance companies that forces those insurance companies to support those pre-existing conditions. And no one will lose their coverage as long as they have continuous coverage. And they won't be raised based on a pre-existing condition as long as they had coverage and that coverage has not lapsed. Even if that coverage lapsed, which is something that no other insurance does, even if that coverage lapsed over 60 days, then all of a sudden you say, I've got this pre-existing condition. They can't deny you, and they can only charge you a higher premium for 1 year. Now, Tom, that's like that is something you've never seen in insurance before. And we back that up with $138 billion to cover the states if they want to. You know, the states cannot design their systems to do this, to cover these pre-existing conditions if they want. But they have to prove to us the way that they're going to do it, and it has to meet certain requirements to make sure those pre-existing conditions are covered. Now, let me tell you what that's like. That's almost like nowhere else can you all of a sudden wait until your house is burning to buy the insurance. Nowhere else can you wait until you've wrecked your car to buy the insurance. I mean, there is a catch-all that is above and beyond anything else in the fact. And let me tell you that many of my Republican colleagues, they supported it, they voted for this, but they weren't real happy with that. Okay, but we are trying to fulfill the obligation, I believe, and in a wise way, to provide health care so that we can, so no one will be left out. Now, will there be problems? If there are, that's okay. Nobody's out there, even though they try to paint it as Trump care or Ryan care or whatever. Nobody has their name on this as it moves forward to the point that they'll then stand up and say, we've got an idea to make it better, that they'll stand there and go, no, this is mine, and that's going to remain the same it was, as it is with ACA. Remember, we passed 30 different items to correct the problems in the ACA, and the president, the former president, refused to put those into law. And the Democrats in the Senate refused to allow them to pass. So this is not a case where we can't adjust this as we go.
Right,
but we can't just bury our heads in the sand and allow the system to collapse, because the people will then come back to us and say, well, why didn't you do something?
Right.
So we moved a bill forward. It's now in the Senate. Now we can move on to other things, and the Senate can work on that, and we'll see what the Senate does with it, and then we'll bring it back, and we'll figure out, is that what something that we can support in a conference committee and get it to the president's desk? My hope is we do, because we're going to have to do it very, very quickly. Because if you talk to the people, as these premiums are climbing, and they are, we have to get these problems cured.
All right. Now, there was one in particular criticism that Mike Boss hurt health care for veterans when he voted for this bill.
No. Good. I'm really glad you asked that. It does not hurt health care for veterans at all. The VA is still in existence. I'm still working on VA. Matter of fact, that's my main committee. This doesn't affect anybody that's on the VA system or veterans health care of any type, shape, or form. Doesn't hurt them at all. It doesn't hurt people who are already on Medicare. Okay, remember that. It doesn't affect Medicare. It doesn't affect veterans. And all of those areas that were covered before. If you were on the Medicaid side, where before the expansion, that's not affected, and it is minimally affected if you were even on the expansion. So no, that's not true.
Sophistry, the use of fallacious arguments, especially with the intention of deceiving. It is the currency and trade of Washington, D.C. right now. This is a problem that has existed since the beginning of politics in ancient Rome and goes all the way back to the Greeks. And this is the new currency and trade in Washington, D.C., the depth of deception and keyhole perspectives and presenting them as ultimate truths. Right now, a man who I've known since I was 5 years old, He caught me last week and he said, do they really, being the Democrats and Republicans, think that everything is absolute, that anything a Republican says, then the Democrats are wrong? If the Democrats say it, it's absolutely wrong. If the Republicans say it, it's absolutely wrong always. This deeply,
no,
they like to use the term polarizing.
Only if you've read it and know it and understand it.
I was talking about the tone in general, though, Mike. You know, that we've come this, Chuck Schumer, you watched that statement from the Senate, you watched them shift yesterday afternoon. I'm like, wow.
Well, it's like what I said a while ago, though. Because people have heard it on the internet or somewhere, they automatically believe it's truth. Therefore, they come to me and they say, this doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. And then I have to say, did you read it? And
Mike,
those
you went over this.
Situations only make things worse.
Mike, you went over this a couple of moments ago. I want to ask you point blank so people hear it. Mike Boss, Congressman, did you read the 127 bill from beginning to end?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to get that on the record,
yep.
All right?
Yeah, I read it.
All right, now here's one. Where'd the money go in Caro? Isn't that really the question right now, where the money went in Caro? After I read Molly Parker's article yesterday afternoon in the Southern Illinois, and I'm like, holy cow, we pay people a lot of money not to work.
Yeah, and let me tell you this, that one of the main things that we'll be doing when we get the person that will do the prosecuting in place, we'll be pushing on the pressure to make sure that people are prosecuted for this. Now, understand, I'm not a prosecutor, nor have I been elected to be the prosecutor. My job will be to encourage them to pursue to the full extent of the law the prosecution to put these people who have committed this crime in jail and hold them accountable for how terrible the things are that they've done. And then the other side of that is try to figure out where we go from here. That's why we're working every day with the mayor. We're working every day with HUD to try to figure out, what do we do with these displaced 180 families? How do we, can we keep them in Caro? If they're not in Caro, then what have I got to do to try to help the school district down there, which looks like it will be then put in a state where a majority of the students are removed from the school, and the school that's already in trouble because of state finances and everything like that will then collapse. They'll have to be bused someplace else. At the same time, while working to try to find and encourage economic growth, business growth, that will actually build Caro back up raise it out of the ashes, per se.
Right.
And that is something that, if you remember, when we created, and it was Brandon Phelps and I that brought about the bill that actually created the Port Authority, that now is looking to try to bring the industry in down there. But then understand that the people have to be there to work.
Right.
So then the question is, Tom, it's just unbelievable that a community the size of Caro and what it was when we were young.
Right.
And how it has fell by the wayside, and it's just we work so hard, and then of course another problem with that is utility costs.
It's interesting. I talked to a businessman, lived in Caro for many, many years, railroad. He moved to Marion. He caught me the other day, and he says, the reason why Caro is the way it is because the government.
Yeah. I mean, somehow we need to get private business, and that's what we're doing with the Port Authority, because it's swinging the door open. You tell me, when you are at the joining of two major rivers, the two largest rivers in this continent, and they join right there, that we don't have just piles of business right there.
There is the only place where there's a confluence of two rivers in the United States that does not a business sector, and this, the combination of the two largest, and nothing there, but it wasn't always that way. Congressman Mike Ross. Mike, I can't tell you how much appreciate the time. The tone out of D.C. is troubling as heck, but we've run out of time. But that's why we talked about these local things, because the media is saying that this is the story. The story is coal miners who have had their pension stolen, their health care benefits from them. The story is Caro, HUD, where that money is just gone because, we got to pay pensions and pay people not to work. All right? A direct quote from one of the stories written about it. And then you look at the Affordable Care Act and the fact that, Mike, if you get rid of the mandate, I'm dropping my health insurance. I'm out. I'll worry about it my own. I'll, quite frankly, health care is not a right. It's not. If it was a right, then everybody would get a free gun.
Yes, there you go. But if you run for Miss USA, don't say that.
Exactly right. Talking about, and I don't necessarily call it a privilege either, because that sounds like, but you cannot say a man or a woman who spent thousands and thousands of dollars to become a doctor that you have a right to their talents and services just because you exist.
Here's the thing. I heard a quote, and I had not heard it before, and it was a quote by John F. Kennedy. And it was a quote that said, "A right is God-given, not government-given." Think about that.
Yeah, and it's an interesting subject, but I think people don't understand how goods and services work sometimes. Just because I know a doctor, he should work for free for me, or somebody else should pay for it. It doesn't work that way. Rights are on a different level. It's 8:43, 17 before the hour. Mike, I'm sorry it took so much of your time, but I do appreciate every doggone minute of it. Really do.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. I'm off to commit.